The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. Good evening. Welcome, welcome. Nice to see you all. So tonight I'd like to talk a little bit about practicing mindfulness. Maybe that's not too surprising at a place called the Insight Meditation Center. But why do we practice? Like, for us as individuals, like, why do we have this mindfulness practice? What are we expecting? Or the benefits or the purpose? Or why would we do this? Is there a way that we have a sense of we would measure how our meditation goes or how our meditation practice over time progresses? Like, what are the values or the qualities that we're expecting to arise or shift or change as a consequence of meditation? And for some of us, we're meditating because we want to reduce stress. Why not? Nobody wants to be completely stressed out all the time. So this that we want to reduce physical difficulties or emotional difficulties or a combination of them or just a number of ways in which stress shows up. Or maybe we want to make changes in our behavior. We have this idea that it'd be really great if I were more loving and compassionate in the world to other people and to myself, to my annoying co-workers or to whomever it might be. Or maybe, for example, we have this idea that we want to lessen procrastination, or we maybe want to work with some activity that feels like a compulsion or an addiction. Maybe we do have an addiction and we're hoping that mindfulness can help. So there's a way in which maybe we want to change our behavior in some way. Or maybe we're practicing mindfulness because we want to understand ourselves better. What makes ourselves tick? Like, what's our inner life? Maybe get in contact with that. Or what are our habits of mind, that which ones that are supporting us and which ones are not supporting us, these patterns that we've inherited and patterns that have been created, whether we intended to create them or not. And I'll say, for me personally, I came to the Dharma to practice partly because I just didn't know what to do with my life. I had this kind of angst, like, I have all these things that I thought I wanted, and yet my life just doesn't seem right. And I didn't really know what to do. I'd been chasing after so many things and for so long, and I've just had this sense there's got to be something different. And I stumbled upon it, the Dharma, by accident through in a yoga class. But each of us has our own story of how we came to the Dharma and why we came initially, and chances are it hasn't been constant or the same the whole time, your whole duration of practicing. But I would say, in general, like, this is a gross generalization, that people do not want their meditation practice, their mindfulness practice, to be about everything that's unpleasant. Like, that isn't our intention when we start this practice. I just want to hang out with everything that's uncomfortable or difficult. Instead, like, some people have this idea, I just want to meditate. I want it to be some kind of like a chill-out session where I can just feel a bit quiet and settle down and feel good for a little bit, or feel better or something like this. Sure, why not? I mean, right? We all want this. Nobody wants to be with difficulty all the time. And to be sure, for some people, that's exclusively what they expect from meditation. I'm using this word meditation in general here. It's an opportunity to chill out. But I would say that mindfulness meditation in particular, as opposed to like maybe just this kind of global idea of meditation and recognizing that there's so many different practices other than just mindfulness, but I would say specifically mindfulness practice can help us with all these things, right? Reducing stress, changing our behavior, having greater understanding. In fact, I would say that those arise whether that's your intention or not. But one thing that's maybe, I don't know if it's unique, but something that I would like to emphasize is that mindfulness meditation is a way to increase the freedom in our lives. And I like this word freedom in a way because it's kind of a vague way and we can understand it in lots of different ways. And there's room for all of us to interpret that in a way that makes sense to us. But one way we might understand freedom is not being pushed around by our experiences. Like, oh, I have to avoid this situation because it might cause some uncomfortable emotions and I don't want those to arise. So I have to avoid this person. I have to avoid this situation. I have to avoid some of these being alone with myself for too long or whatever it is. Or maybe we have this sense that we're spending all of our time engineering, manufacturing, creating, doing whatever we can to control our environment so that we can feel okay, so that nothing unpleasant and untoward difficult arises. And that's not freedom either, if we're just always trying to control everything, control other people, control ourselves, wrestle ourselves into being a particular way, behaving a particular way. Because if we only feel free or relaxed when under certain conditions, when we've got them just right, then that's not real freedom. And what the Buddha is pointing to and what this practice is pointing to is the freedom of not being pushed around by our experiences. The capacity to be with whatever arises. And the confidence to be with whatever arises. That's where the freedom is. So I want to read a little excerpt from a poem. And I'll talk a little bit more about the poem. I'll tell who the poet is and the name of the poem a little bit later. But I'd like to start by just reading this excerpt. I found this poem really powerful and just like to share little bits about it and talk about it. So this poem starts like this. It's a well-known poem. Maybe some of you know this. There's a bluebird in my heart that wants to get out. But I'm too tough for him. I say, stay in there. I'm not going to let anybody see you. There's a bluebird in my heart that wants to get out, but I'm too tough for him. I say, stay in there. I'm not going to let anybody see you. So in some ways, I appreciate very much what the poet is pointing to here, that he's like, he's recognizing so many different things and expressing it, I think, in a way that I appreciate. But might say that expressing an emotional experience and using metaphorical language as a way to express it, sometimes it's not clear what an emotional experience is. And this person's a poet. He's using metaphor and this kind of language, but there's a blue bird in my heart that wants to get out. Like, okay, there's something fluttering. And maybe we're not even clear what it is. And so not only does this poet point into his emotional experience, but he's also having some awareness of his relationship to that experience. He's saying, stay in there. I'm not going to let anybody see you. Maybe this is a sense of shame, or maybe a sense of, you know, this shouldn't be here, or something's wrong if it's here, but clearly a sense of this is not something that's welcome. So the poet knows about this emotional experience and his relationship to this emotional experience. And maybe he also has this view of himself. I'm too tough for him, the poet says. So this mindfulness, we might say, of this view of himself, or maybe even a wish that he has for himself to be tough so that this little bluebird can't get out. And mindfulness points to all of this, our experience, including our emotional experiences, our relationship to our experiences, and sometimes things that aren't so clear or obvious to see, and that is a view that we have about ourselves and a view about we have about what how things should be and how they shouldn't be. And with this, like learning to be with the experience, or we begin with just by recognizing what's happening, and then with recognition, we can increase our capacity not only to be with experiences, but to even acknowledge them and be able to tease apart, like for example, an emotional experience and our relationship to them. Sometimes they get all tangled up and we can't quite tell them apart. It can be really helpful to tease them apart. What's happening and our relationship to what's happening. So this poet, he's not expressing freedom, though, right? He's having some mindfulness there, but right, this there's a bluebird that wants to get out, and if the bluebird isn't free, and he's trying to control his experience, he's not going to let anybody see this bluebird. And we have a sense that his heart is closed, and or he has this fear of intimacy. He doesn't want anybody to know that there's this bluebird in his heart. But perhaps he's on his way to more freedom because he is recognizing these different elements. He is being mindful. And this is the way forward. Like if we want to have some freedom, it's really helpful to notice what is it that we are tangled up with? What is it that is inhibiting this freedom? So it helps to have some understanding, some awareness, some intimacy with this, with whatever it is that's arising. I like to read a little bit further along in this poem. I'm skipping some parts in the middle. And then I felt like I should preface this and then I'd like to talk a little bit about some of these other verses, but I feel obliged to say, you know, I was thinking to myself, I'm trained as a research scientist and as a Dharma teacher. Like, I have no business looking at the American literature and trying to unpack it and look at it. So I just want to recognize that there's lots of ways we can interpret poems, and I'm just using this in one particular lens. So I kind of want to honor the poet, and I want to honor those people who study English literature, which may say, Diana, I don't know what you're talking about. But with that as a disclaimer, maybe. Here's further along in the poem. There's a bluebird in my heart that wants to get out, but I'm too clever. I only let him out at night Sometimes when everybody's asleep, I say, I know that you're there, so don't be sad. Then I put him back. But he's singing a little in there. I haven't quite let him die. And we sleep together like that with our secret pact. And it's nice enough to make a man weep. But I don't weep. Do you? I find this poem really touching. And there's a number of ways that, as I said, we can interpret it, but his emotions are shifting. In the beginning, he's talking to this bluebird, and he's saying, stay in there. It has this tone of harshness. And then he, at the end of the poem, he's saying, it's enough to make a man weep. So first, I think this is, I could speak for myself, this is often the way it is when we discover like uncomfortable experiences or like we have some emotions. For me, I had a lot of fear and I wasn't even sure what I was afraid of. Like I couldn't say I'm afraid of this or that, but with some of these long meditation retreats I was doing, there would just be this fear, this knot of fear, and I couldn't point to exactly what it was or, but first I just was trying to like shove it down, like, oh, I don't want to be with that. But then, you know, things were shifting. At the end of the poem, he's saying it's nice enough to make a man weep. He's pointing to maybe the poignancy and the tenderness of just being with our experiences, being mindful of them as best we can. As best we can. It's not, he's saying that he didn't let this bluebird die, right? He's not like getting rid of it. He's not trying to excise a part of himself, but instead he's starting to engage with the experience. And I would say that relationship with his emotions is also shifting. Starts with saying, I'm too tough for him. And saying, I'm too clever for him. I go, okay, now I see you, but now I got to figure this out. I don't have to experience this. And at the end of the poem, he's saying, we sleep together. So in a way, you know, like maybe making friends. Often this is kind of how our emotional life is too. I would say with the practice, we learn to make friends with all these parts of ourselves that we were trying to ignore or somehow excise from our experience or trying to shape our inner life in some way that they weren't there. And lastly, I would say, this is of course my interpretation, his relationships with others is shifting. In the beginning, there's this sense of isolation and I'm not going to let anyone see you. Right? And maybe for me, I had the sense he's not even going to let himself see this little bluebird. And then in the middle of the poem is this, maybe a sense of acceptance. I only let him out at night sometimes when everybody's asleep. So maybe like, okay, you're there, but not only when the conditions are right. Going to be with this. And then at the end, maybe the sense of connection and conversation even. He ends with, it's nice enough to make a man weep, but I don't weep. Do you? So all of a sudden there's this connection to somebody else before there's this real isolation and then there's this openness. So this poem is called Bluebird by Charles Bukowski. It's a powerful poem. I left out a few stanzas there in the middle, but this way in which, you know, we meet our emotional life, and as we meet it, things start to shift towards more opening, more acceptance, more being in dialogue with ourselves and with others. And we do this by, and we find greater freedom by bringing awareness to all aspects of our experience. It's perfectly natural that, as I was mentioning earlier, that there's these parts that we don't really want to be aware of, and we're just wishing they would go away. But what this practice is about, meeting all of it, including some things that we might consider distractions, sounds, that neighbor's dog that keeps on barking, or whatever it might be, whatever the sounds might be. We just fold them in like this too. We can be mindful of that. We can be mindful of a dog barking, and then be mindful of the annoyance. And then be mindful, maybe there's even a sense of ourself, like, don't our neighbors know that I'm trying to meditate here? And why do they have a dog? They should let the dog do whatever or something. And in ways that we kind of like create this strong sense of self when our preferences aren't getting met. And maybe to just be mindful of that. Oh, yeah. Here's the experience of me versus the world, and the uncomfortableness of that. So this idea of, you know, we can bring mindfulness to everything. Everything. And as we do, we start to find more and more freedom. There's things that we don't have to avoid so much. We know that we can practice with them. And in some ways, I kind of like this poem because it doesn't have a neat and tidy and they lived happily ever after and rainbows and unicorns and hearts and all that kind of stuff. Because I kind of wanted to show that this is, you know, this is a person expressing some time in his life. And sometimes our life isn't filled with hearts and unicorns and rainbows and this kind of thing. It has difficulties. Of course it does. And so we start where we are. This practice isn't asking us to be somebody else. It's not asking us to pretend things are different. We start where we are. And sometimes where we are, there's a lot of difficulties, suffering. Sometimes not, too. Sometimes we feel like we have a little bit more ease in our life. In particular, I'd like to talk just a little bit about mindfulness of emotions. This idea that, you know, if we're being mindful of like our inner life and emotions here, I don't know what the bluebird in the heart wants out, but right, we can think of all kinds of things in there. And I appreciate this poet pointing to that. Mindfulness of emotions is a way in which, if we're just able to be with them, recognize them, have awareness of them without insisting that they be different, without trying to shove them away, we can allow these emotions to flow through us, to arise and pass away. I think I heard this from Gil Fronstahl, emotion. This idea that there's a movement, motion, and that if we don't get all tangled up with them, that they will move through. And part of mindfulness practice is discovering how we are tangled up and how we get tangled up and how might we disentangle ourselves. Just want to say a little bit about emotions, and then I'll talk a little bit about how we can be mindful of them. There's a lot to be said here, so I'm just going to touch the surface here. Maybe I'll do some more talks on this. But one way to think about emotions is that they're a form of communication from ourselves to ourselves. Some kind of way like, oh, I'm feeling angry. Well, then there's maybe a way we feel like a boundary's been crossed, or we're seeing some injustice, something that feels like this shouldn't be happening. Maybe we feel sad. Maybe there's been some loss, and it's perfectly natural that we have some sadness, or maybe there's a loss of something that we're not even quite clear, that we're mourning something that we don't even have some quite clarity about. But it's a communication from ourselves to ourselves, but we can only really kind of like learn what this communication is trying to tell us if we allow that emotion to exist, instead of trying to shove it down or distract ourselves, or if we don't try to immediately push it away in whatever way, which is the habit, I think, for most humans. And these days, right, there's industries, billions of dollars are getting spent to make it easy as possible for you to distract yourself and to avoid your inner life. So there are forms of communication, and I'll say that they are also composites of both physical sensations as well as mental sensations. We can kind of like divide our experience into those two ways, physical and mental. There's different ways we could talk about emotions. This is one way I'm doing it now. Physical, fear in the gut, anger is hotness. Sadness sometimes feels like really heavy and maybe like pressure behind the eyes. So there's a bodily experience that goes with emotions, and sometimes we're not so aware of them or connected to them, but they're there generally. And most often they're like in the trunk or in the face or something like this. Not always, but. And then there's these thoughts, these mental events that go with them, stories of who did what to whom, and the next time that happens, I'm going to make sure they did this. Or maybe we're rehashing a conversation and thinking that trying to make it go differently, you know, something that already happened, and we're trying to make it go differently. Or maybe we have this sense of trying to make things, or a story about how things should be and how we're going to make it be that way. And maybe in this poem, the poet says, I'm not going to let anyone see you. You know, right? I'm going to control it that nobody can see. And these things shouldn't be seen, this type of an idea. And sometimes it's hard to maybe understand exactly, like, what's a thought, what's an emotion. So we don't have to get too tangled up in that. I'd like to kind of simplify and say there's a bodily aspect and a mental aspect to our emotional life. And maybe I'll start with this this quote, which I think is a kind of a playful way to think about this. This some time ago, there was this article in the New York Times about mindfulness being taught in schools. And the reporter asked this young kid who was participating in a mindfulness program, and asked this little kid to describe mindfulness. And here's the kid's response. Mindfulness is not hitting someone in the mouth. And I kind of appreciate this, right? You know, this recognition. You know, what this kid is pointing to probably is like, oh yeah, okay, here's anger here and I don't have to act out on it. You know, some awareness of this. So, and I'm imagining like, this is like a way to be with difficult emotions instead of like, lashing out. So how do we work with difficult emotions? There's a few ways. I'll just give some highlights here. One is, can be really helpful, is notice that there's a mixture of things happening at that moment. Maybe there's this heat of anger, and there's this perfectly neutral sensation of your feet on the ground. And there's a perfectly neutral sensation of the furnace going, or the refrigerator humming or something like this. And maybe you feel hungry. And you're noticing that the person is wearing a particular type of shirt or something like this. So just to kind of like open up the experience, sometimes we like collapse into the emotion, the anger, or whatever it is. It's not always easy to do, but to open up the experience and notice anything else, really. And often the easiest is feeling the pressure on the feet touching the ground. And there's something in particular about that that can kind of help us feel grounded and settled. And the awareness might go to the feet and then go back to the anger. And then we can go to the feet and then go back to the anger and then go back to the feet. But there's something about coming back to the feet that interrupts the momentum of the anger getting bigger and bigger and bigger, right? We have all noticed this. And there's something that, you know, we might think about, that the amount of harm we can cause our relationships if we're angry for a full day, as opposed to if we're just angry for a couple of hours, right? We might not send that email. We might not make that phone call if we're, you know, the anger, it's still there, but just isn't for the same duration. So that's one thing we can do. Just notice there is a mixture. So we could ask ourselves, what else is here? Anger is here. Sadness is here, this terrible sadness. What else is here? And allow the attention to rest on something neutral or pleasant. If there's something pleasant, maybe you're wearing some soft clothing. Maybe you're sitting in a comfy chair. So something like that. That's one thing to do with difficult emotions or strong emotions. Maybe I should use that word, strong emotions. And then can we transform this emotion from this abstract concept, sadness, anger, love, whatever emotion it might be, anxiety. Transform it from this abstract concept into something that's a little bit more tangible. And this is where being aware of the bodily experience of emotions can really help. Oh, I'm afraid and I have this knot in my stomach. And this knot feels like it's in this region and it's seems like it's a little bit dynamic. It's moving around. It's not, it has maybe a little bit of a throbbing quality. So this way of kind of like bringing the awareness to a bodily experience, something tangible that's happening in this moment, is another way we can interrupt the momentum of whatever the emotion is. We're not trying to get rid of the emotion. We're not trying to shame ourselves or anything like this. We're just trying to not dip into overwhelm where we lose all our wisdom. So to notice the bodily experience, the bodily part of the emotion. And if we are finding that we're just really stuck in this emotion for a long time, and maybe the power of it or the intensity of it is waxing and waning, but we find that we're really it has a recurring feeling to it, or this going over and over and over again. Maybe we can just drop in the question. It's a gentle inquiry. Not that we have to find the answer. We don't have to figure it out. The power here is in asking the question. The power is not in getting the answer. And a question is there something underneath this that is fueling this anger or whatever the emotion is? What is underneath this? And as I said, we don't have to do this archaeological interior dig to figure it out. It's more just being open to whatever is fueling it, because there is something that's fueling it. Otherwise, the emotion would just arise, you'd be mindful of it, and it would pass away. right? All the neurologists and physiologists and mindfulness teachers that notice this, right? That things arise and pass away. But if it has this way in which it's just there for a long time, then there's something that's fueling it. And just having this kind of curiosity about what is underneath this? Having that curiosity, bringing this kind of investigation and this openness that itself is a way which might create, that creates the conditions and when some new understanding might arise, and that might help with a new relationship to it or a new understanding or something like that. So many of the times we practice mindfulness and to have some reduce stress or reduce anxiety or to change some of our habits or maybe to gain some better understanding. And I'd like to maybe offer just this language of some more freedom. And part of the way to have more freedom is to recognize where do we not have freedom, where are we, I'm using this expression, getting pushed around, but this way in which we're trying to navigate our lives, spending so much energy trying to avoid this and only have that. And of course we do, right? Of course humans do this. And we need to do this. It's wise to do this. But there's a way in which it can also feel exhausting and oppressive. So can we have some discernment about what's helpful to avoid and what's maybe we don't need to avoid? What's helpful to support greater freedom and what is like maybe some tanglements or something that's are not allowing for greater freedom? And part of that, what maybe being with emotions is something that can support this freedom, as well as reducing stress and greater awareness and changing our behaviors. So I think I'll stop there and open it up to see if there's some questions or comments. Maybe I'll say while Jim is walking the microphone, it's not uncommon for maybe people later when they hear it to say, what was the name of that poem again? I'll just say, it's Bluebird by Charles Bukowski.
Okay. Thanks for sharing. How do you, when you're getting curious about what's underneath an emotion that's arising, how do you sort of draw the distinction between unhealthy or like ruminating, digging into it versus it's helpful and curious? Because you could just feel the emotion and that would be it and try not to put a narrative to it. But how do you kind of go through that process?
Yeah. I think this is a great question. And yeah, I think part of the answer is in how you described it. If you find that there's a lot of ruminating and going around and around and around and around, we could sometimes, it can be as simple as to ask ourselves, is this helpful? I've thought this thought, 500 bazillion quadrillion times. This isn't so helpful. So that sometimes it could be just, having that question. How was that answer? Was that like, oh, okay, but no, that's not.
So definitely the rumination when you're cycling, mm-hmm. right? So I like that question. Is it helpful? But sometimes the asking the question and like the creating the narrative around it is the unhelpful part of it, of the emotion, right? You're investigating it, you create a story that's not helpful.
I see, thank you.
Around the emotion. How do you know whether it's like, oh, I'm trying to understand what's, your mind can spin like, well, maybe it's this, but then from that, and like helpful analyzing versus just the emotion is what it is and not trying to put a narrative or understanding.
Yeah. So when you're asking the question, you're using the word analyzing, and I'm, you know, kind of like shy, a little bit shy of that word of analyzing. I'm just saying a gentle inquiry. Is there something underneath that's fueling this? So less about figuring it out and analyzing. And I appreciate what you're pointing to, that sometimes we can create a narrative, a whole story, that I'm having this emotion because I'm a person who X, or because of this or that, and then we get all tangled up with that story, and that isn't so helpful. Maybe if we find ourselves stuck in that, we can do these other things. We can feel our feet on the ground, feel it into the body. These types of things to kind of like help interrupt the momentum of those things. Thank you. Somebody else have a question? Yes, over here.
Good evening, Diana. Thank you.
Hi, Rose.
I have a question regarding the, like, the mindfulness aspect. Like, I know I'm very grateful for this practice because I am gaining more awareness of my emotions and what's overwhelming me. I just feel like sometimes am I just being passive about it? Like, okay, I know the dog is barking and I'm going to ignore it because I don't want to make a big deal out of it. But in doing so, I feel frustrated, or I feel like it's still bothering me, or I mean, the dog barking is figurative for,
yeah, I know
life, but I just sometimes feel like it's not where, like, this practice is very, has been very life-changing for me. I just, with all of this, the presence of where I'm at and how I'm feeling, and just sitting with all the things that I think I'm aware of, or maybe I'm just, they're just so much more illuminated. I just don't know if it's like how to be okay with it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, this is a great question. Yeah. So maybe I'll say a few things. I'm just going to go with this dog barking thing. Sure, we can try to create the perfect environment in which we feel comfortable all the time. I kind of, you know, like, how's that project hasn't worked for me? Trying to make everything just be right. So something like the dog barking is a place where we can practice. Like, okay, here's annoyance, and this is what annoyance feels like. Frustration. This is what frustration feels like, anger. Because there will be times in your life where you cannot control it, and it will be really hard. We're all going to get sick. People that we love are going to get sick, and we won't be able to change it. But if we are practicing for other things, in the simpler things like the dog barking, sure, you could pick up the phone and go to the neighbor's house, or I don't know, all these types of things. But it also could be a place to practice. And so that, because there will be plenty of things in our lives that are really difficult that we can't change. So, like, there's just nothing we can do. There's lots of stuff about that. So that's maybe...
No, I thank you so much. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so thank you for your practice, yeah. And thank you for your kind attention.